It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. Delighted to be with you. Mark is running the program from behind the glass. And you are the whole reason we do this. We love talking to real people. So if you've got a financial question, give us a call. 855-411-JILL. Or send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. And I just want to note that before we get into our first call, we've got Daniel on the line from Atlanta, that this past week, the Nobel Prize in Economics was awarded to Richard Thaler. He is a University of Chicago professor, and I love him. He is one of the trailblazing folks in the field of behavioral economics. Specifically, the Nobel panel said that they were awarding the prize for research showing how emotions can impact economic and investment decision making. See, it's not your fault. And there are various biases that we are influenced by. One of my favorites being confirmation bias. That's when you seek out the expert or information that confirms your own belief. So if you've got some belief and you want that opinion and you want someone to parrot it back to you, this is probably not the show for you because we don't like to do that. But there's also the one that I think is very important when it comes to investing called recency bias. That is the tendency to remember whatever just happened more vividly or to give recent information more weight than historical data. So think of it this way. You know, oh, stocks are rising, everything is great, and everything's going to keep going great. So you think that that trend is going to persist. Or when you're in 2009 and you say, oh my God, it's the worst. Things are cratering. My portfolio's down by half. You cash out and you hide because you think the worst is going to continue. It's really interesting to note that I believe recency bias is the number one reason that when you look at every single investment disclosure statement, it says past performance is no guarantee of future results. That's a wonderful thing to remember, by the way. You cannot be sure. So congratulations to Dr. Thaler. Thank you. We love behavioral economics here. And we'll continue to talk about that. But right now, let's go take our first caller. It's Daniel in Atlanta. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
Thank you, Jill, and thank you for taking my call. I'm a 59-year-old retired medical scientist with the federal government. I had to step down a couple of years ago due to disability, Parkinson's disease, and related cognitive impairment. My financial situation is that I have our government 401k, the Thrift Savings Plan, which currently I have about $500,000 in that. Mm-hmm. It was kind of famine or feast. It was very slow for a long time. Now it's going like gangbusters, but I know that's not going to continue forever. I also have a couple of IRAs that total about $230,000, which are inherited IRAs. Mm-hmm. My situation is that I'm in a living situation where due to my disability, I need more assistance. So I moved into a very posh but expensive retirement community. My net with Social Security, pension, and my disability insurance is about $5,500 a month. The rent at this place that I'm going to be going to would be about $4,050 a month. I'm going to try to not dip into my 401k, but I'm being urged by people to perhaps convert it over into something that's a little more liquid. Currently getting a phenomenal interest of about 17%. So some weeks I'll dip $5,000 back. And so I'm reluctant to kind of switch over, but yet I know that you know, easy write, easy rob. That could change, too. So financial security obviously is a concern for me. So I just wanted to know, sticking with the thrift savings plan, or whether you think it is more prudent to go to other forms of investment.
Okay. So the $4,000 a month, does that cover everything? Is that your meals? I mean, I just want to make sure do you feel like, do you need any money to come from these accounts that you can anticipate at least on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, I have my long-term care insurance premium, which is $300 a month, the car payment, which is about $200, you know, the miscellaneous things. It covers, you know, like cleaning and meals and your rent. But there are a few things, and things like going to movies and, you know, working out at a gym or something that aren't covered, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So but it's pretty good.
So you're basically feeling like the income, the $5,500, which is Social Security, pension, disability, that is all pretty much going to cover your needs, right?
That's what I'm trying to, I hope so. So I'm going to at least give it a try for a couple of months and see how it works out. But I think it should.
Now, just correct me if I'm wrong. That disability, does that turn into, what does that turn into when you turn 65? Does that disability?
It turns into nothing.
That's what I thought. That just ends, right?
Right.
So how much is the disability right now component of the $5,500?
Oh, it's about, I would say it's 2,000 out of the 5,500. It's the smartest thing I ever did.
Interesting. But we're going to have to replace that.
Exactly.
But I got 6 years to do it.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm thinking. How are you invested right now in the thrift savings plan? I know I'm very familiar with the plan. So you've got all the different funds, and there's some life cycle funds. Are you, when you said 17%, it made me think that you must be a very big into the C fund. Is that right?
Let's see. Actually, the breakdown is I'm 60% common stock index, 20% small cap. And I did do a 2030 life cycle fund, 20%.
Okay. We're going to come back to you. You see, you have now made me work for a living here, Daniel, and I don't blame you. I mean, sitting around frittering away my day, this is actually a very fascinating case. Let's do this. You're going to go on hold for a moment. We're going to come back. We're going to give you a whole segment more, because I think the complicating factor here is the disability $2,000 going away. Because without that, there is this sense that you're pretty much covered. And that gives you different decisions to make around the thrift savings plan as well as the IRA. So when we return, for those of you listening, the thrift savings plan, it's kind of like a 401k for government workers. There's a government securities fund, and there's also some stock funds. So let's do an allocation for Daniel when we get back. You are listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And hop on to jillonmoney.com if you've missed any part of past programs. You can go connect right up into our YouTube channel. It's at the top of the page. And you can find some old shows. Well, we've got a really interesting question here. Daniel from Atlanta on the line. He's 59. He is disabled. And he's got income currently of about $5,500 a month. That's from Social Security, pension, and disability. And that will cover his posh retirement home of $4,050 a month. All sounds good, Daniel, but as you mentioned, that disability part of it, that $2,000, goes away in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, without that fact, it would almost be pretty easy to do this. So you've got $500,000 in a thrift savings plan, all mm-hmm. of which, well, I shouldn't say that. Let's say about 85% of which is very risky in stocks. The C fund, the small cap, and the life cycle, the portion of the life cycle. How is the IRA invested right now?
They're in deceased IRAs, their inheritances. I'm not real sure how they're invested, but they've been doing sort of a steady performance of about, I would guess, about 5 or 6%. So they're doing reasonably well.
But that's
kind of the one I pay the least attention to. It's kind of just sort of been not doing anything spectacular, but not anything disastrous either.
Do you know where it's held? What firm?
No, I don't.
Okay. So a couple of things that I just want to point out, and then let's get into this allocation. Number one is I think you should like kind of just pay a little bit more attention to that IRA, because we mm-hmm. got to figure out where it is, how the money's being invested, so we can get a good picture of this. I think you've got too much risk on the table, not because you need so much money immediately, just because there's too much risk. There's no reason mm-hmm. for it. We're going to mm-hmm. be able to generate your cash flow needs. That's not going to be a problem, because 6 years from now, even if you wanted to take a little bit of money out between now and 6 years, that's not going to be a problem. But to generate the $25,000 a year from a $750,000 total asset base is not going to be a problem. I think what you should be looking at is pushing more of your TSP in some of the safer stuff. Not all of it, but I think that it is, you know, that you've got two funds that are quite good in the TSP that are safe stuff. One is the Government Securities Fund, which is boring, you know, but even just a little bit. It's just a tiny bit of money that you can always get to without risk. But the fixed income index investment, that F fund, is a good fund. And I think that you might be surprised to learn that having some of that safe money that, you know, it may not be a lot, but 2.5 or 3% that is consistent and safe is really good. And I think that you're going to need to have some of your money in that. And if I were looking at your overall allocation for someone in your situation, I would probably be more like at least 40 or 50% in the safe stuff, and the rest can be in the small cap and the C fund. That's my preference. And if you wanted to let the IRA be a little bit like the fill-in-the-blank kind of funds, that's fine. But you have very good funds in this thrift savings plan. You don't need to get out of the TSP. You do need to dial back some of your risk, because in your situation or in any of our situations, we've got a bull market that's been going on for a long time, since March of 2009. Markets are up pretty dramatically. You don't have to go to cash, but you do have to be more careful about how you can absorb losses. Because if the market fell by 20 or 30% today or tomorrow, we're in by the end of the year, you'd be really upset. So I think that you should be more of a balanced investor for where you are in your life. Does not mean you have to get out of everything, but it does mean that you have to pay more attention to the risk you are assuming, and understand that that risk doesn't do a lot for you. Because if all we need to do is take that $25,000 a year to replace a disability. Maybe it's going to be 30 or 40. I don't know. But I want you to be more secure in the concept that this money is going to last you a very long time, and that you will not have to endure some horrible market crash.
Right.
How would that feel to you to kind of pull the risk back a bit?
I think that's a great idea. So I'm currently, as I said, in common stock, small cap, life cycle, you're saying bring on GNF fund. Is there like a distribution that you think would be?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would probably, let's play with this a little bit now. And you're going to have to go through this yourself, and I want you to think hard about it. But I guess that maybe if I were going to be reallocating for you, let me do this very quickly. The G fund is the lowest risk, okay? And maybe you would have just like 5% in there, okay? And then you would have the F fund, which is essentially would be your bond investment. And so maybe I'd have 40, maybe, you know what, I'll do this. Let's do 10% G, 40% F. The C fund is the stock market fund. So maybe what we would do there is say, let's do 30% in the C fund, 10% small cap, 10% international. That's what I would do.
Perfect.
And it's not going to be foolproof. You're going to be mad at me because if the market keeps going up, let me tell you why. If the market keeps going up, this is, you're going to be mad at me. You're going to say, "Ah, no. I could have made more money." But if the market were to collapse, you'll say, "That girl saved my bacon."
I know.
So there it is. I am a wimp. And even if you took that same attitude towards the IRA account, let's say you look at the IRA account, maybe it's at Vanguard or Fidelity, wherever it is, and you say, you know what, I got to lock down half of this. All you would do is sort of replicate this, but replicate it with low-cost index funds.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be in a blankety blank intermediate term bond fund. You might be in a stock index fund, a small cap fund, a international index fund, but do it in a way that is low cost to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to be in really good stead. Again,
right.
I can't tell you, it's so weird, but like, whenever I get these kinds of calls, I get so nervous because I think, oh my God, if something bad happens, we're in rough shape.
I am exactly the same way, so I appreciate that.
So that's it. I think you're on the right track. You are going to be fine. And all we can do is really hope that you get yourself in a place where you're safe, secure, you're living large, and taking care of yourself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Jill. And Jill, and thank you so much for the excellent advice.
All right.
I have the person to call.
All right. Excellent. Good luck to you. Thanks so much for calling, Daniel. I hope that that is not lost on everybody, because you know what? It is so important that when we are getting to a point where we're no longer adding to our investment accounts, that we can endure these very, these sporadic downturns. You're going to get a bear market. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But I can't tell you when. Mark's like, when's going to happen? Let's sell. We don't know. We just don't know. All right. You're listening to Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call anytime, day or night, 855-411-JILL.
You sit there in You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, don't forget to check out our couple of things. Our podcast, Better Off, you can get it on Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. I don't know where else you find your favorite podcast, but I'm sure you might find another place. And if you miss any part of this program, go to our website, JillOnMoney.com. And at the top of the page, Mark has this nifty link to our YouTube channel. Again, Mark does all of this. I do nothing. I just talk. Wind her up and talk. I talk and read books. That's about it. And so go check out the website, JillOnMoney.com. There's some video in there. There's some other stuff. Just fun. Okay. Quickly, just want to tell everyone, I got a couple of questions recently about 529 plans for saving for college. And just as a reminder, those 529 plans that don't have a state requirement, you don't have to necessarily be in the state to use them. And you should check with your state to see whether you have a tax, any sort of tax advantage for using a 529 plan. But if there isn't and you're looking for a plan outside of your state because your state's plan isn't that good, the four different plans that I like are the Nevada, Utah, Alaska, and Maryland. All of them use very low-cost funds inside of the plans. So I just got a bunch of questions about that recently, so I thought I'd make a quick announcement. And of course, remember we had Kelly Peeler on, who was NextGenVest CEO. And she was talking about how to help high school kids and college students work through the process of applying for college and getting financial aid. Just remind you that her text, 646-798-1745, I want help paying for college. That's what you write. Okay, now, sorry about that. Just had to do a little business. Let's talk to Enza, who is on the line from Buffalo. Hello, Enza. Welcome to the program. What can I do for you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually calling for my son, who is still in college. He's in his second year of college, and we talked about investing his money. He works part-time, so he's accrued roughly about $8,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes, it is great. And, well, he has no expenses to speak of. He lives home, so I figured this is a good time for him to start. And he's really gung-ho about it, so I'm like, okay, I don't know where to begin. I'm really not savvy when it comes to that type of stuff. So I listened to you on Saturdays, and I thought, well, let me just email Jill and see what she says.
Perfect.
So,
Enza, he has no expenses. He's living home. How's he paying for college? Are you guys paying for it, or is he contributing? What's the breakdown?
Right now what we're doing is he's just taking the loans that he's eligible to receive,
mm-hmm.
and which is probably not the smarter thing to do, but right now he wants to work, save money, and then when he's done with school, the school is a very good school. It's not very expensive. When he's done with school, he plans on paying that off, and if we can, we will help him, but right now, you know, the loans that he received is able to cover everything.
Okay. And if you could give a guess, when he graduates, how much money will there be in outstanding loans?
Actually, not very much. I'm guessing about $25,000.
Okay. And are these Pell grants? Are they at, do you know the interest rate? Or are they private loans? What are they?
No, they're not private loans. They're, I believe, they're federal loans, which are... Right now, I believe that 3.5.
Mm-hmm. That's a good rate, right?
Yeah.
So, there's two things to consider. If he wants to invest and really get that money to work, he could, as an experiment, try to do it himself. He could, open up an account with some firm like TD Ameritrade or Vanguard or Charles Schwab, and he can start that process. Alternatively, he could take the money that he's earning and actually not take as much in loans and pay some of the freight on the way. Because 3.5% is certainly cheap, but, it still has to pay it off. So there's two questions. Are we investing for the long term, like very long term? In that case, I would say, yeah, he can go ahead and, try to go to a place like puts half of the money, 50 or 100 bucks, I think, is the minimum in many of these accounts. He could open up a Roth IRA against his earned income, but then he can't touch it until he gets into retirement. So that may be too long a time horizon. Or he could just say, well, the simplest thing I could do is to make sure I use the $8,000 and use that to pay for college, and that way I don't have to borrow money for school. So those are kind of the basic choices. He can also, what I would suggest he might want to also do is check out a what's called a robo-advisor, which is where he can go to a place like Betterment or Wealthfront, and he can take an investing quiz and start to walk through what the process of investing looks like. And that would essentially be a very cheap way for him to get a taste of what investing looks like. And so those are my choices. I think that it would be very easy for him to do like any of those. The most conservative approach obviously would be for him to just say, I'm going to use this money, pay for college, and when I get out of college and I'm working, then I'll be able to start investing. So I don't know. If he has more questions, he can certainly call me directly. How about that? I'm going to give you an open invitation to come back.
Thank you.
All right. But those are the basic outlines. I kind of feel like investing for him right this second, his time may be better spent studying and doing that. But, you know, if he's really gung-ho, I don't want to dissuade him either.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, sure. That's an alternative. Just pay off the school and now invest later.
You got it. That's kind of where I'm leaning.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. Should I say good luck to the Buffalo Sabres? Why not? Mark doesn't want me to, but I will. Even when you're starting out, it's very hard because people don't know where to turn. But there's lots of options, low minimums, so give it a whirl. Okay, you are listening to Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a call. 855-411-JILL or send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. We got an email. It made me so sad, but I want to try to help out. So this is from Marlene, who read our article about caregiving and was interested. And she said, I am in that situation right now, diagnosed with lung cancer. An extensive treatment. A daughter has moved from Texas to my home in Arizona and moved in with me to be of help. What a nice daughter. I know caregivers can receive compensation from some department. I don't have a clue as to where to apply for that assistance. Is it a federal or state program? Any suggestions would be so welcome because at 80 years old, my thinking cap is a bit slower these days. Thank you, Jill. Well, Marlene, I didn't really know too much about this, so I went to the old Google search. And what I came up with is some information from the Arizona Department of Economic Security. So that is des.az.gov. And the DES is the Division of the Aging and Adult Services. And it's interesting. So I've learned that the DES says, it says here that they offer non-medical home and community-based services and support for individuals that qualify through their local area agencies on aging. And there's some links here. And it says that it does not offer any type of program or service by which a caregiver will be paid to care for a spouse, relative, neighbor, other loved one, or another person. We are often, and I'm reading right from the website, we are often asked the question about being, quote, paid to be a caregiver to someone in need. The only organization that has such a plan in place is the Arizona Long-Term Care System. This program is located in a different State Department than the Department of Economic Security. So I would go check it out. They have a link to different offices. There's, by the way, great resources for your family caregivers, training. I would check this out. And if you want, you can also just, I'm going to give you this phone number because anyone else listening, you don't care. So just relax. 602-417-6600. But that's a good place to start. Oh, that's a hard one, Mark. You know, I don't like that. It's a bummer. What do you think? Hey, gang, if you're listening to this, I said to Mark, I want to try to get this guy in the radio show. He's like really very famous. His name is Atul Gawande. I don't know if that's pronounced correctly. But anyway, I've heard him interviewed before. He wrote this book called Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End. I'm sort of intrigued by this. I mean, look, it doesn't have like a direct hit on the financial world, but it is true that I think something like 80% of the costs that you accumulate on medicine and healthcare occur in the last year of life. So I don't know. What do you think, Mark? I think we should try to get him. No, maybe. All right. I'm going to let him read it. I think you guys, I'm so into this, honestly, because I've gone through it myself. Mark, you're a tiny bit young, but, you know, in 10 years when your parents need help, you're going to see. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Okay. What's my time left? Can I do one more? Okay. Hello, Jill. I've been working on paying down my credit cards. I finally did it this summer. Zero credit card debt now. Woo! Now, of course, I'm getting all kinds of offers from different companies. Wells Fargo card, raise my limit. Others have high interest rates attached. What I want to do is start fresh with cards that have a zero interest intro period. Should I cancel my credit cards that have high interest? No, you should not, because what that actually does is it just don't cut it up and don't cancel it. All right? That's most important. And then the next question is it feasible to call current cards I have and ask them for a new 0% intro rate, or will they not do that? Yeah, why not? I would try. I want the cards for the perks offered, plus to continue to build better credit. Thanks. I'm a huge fan. Paul, just he wants also to know that he's going to use this for his business. Should he use Cabbage instead of credit cards? Nah. I still think, call me crazy, but I still think the American Express Open, the small business card, is a good one to use. They've also got good resources. So, but call your current cards, see what they can do for you, the companies, but don't cancel cards. You know, credit expert John Alzheimer always says, don't cancel anything. You can stop using them, and don't get so hooked into these rewards and all that nonsense either, because I'm very worried that after you've worked so hard to pay down those horrible accumulating debts, we don't want you to do it again, and we don't want you to be tempted to do it again. Okay. Okay, so that's it. If you've got a financial question, give us a call. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. And you can also call us. Did I do that backwards? Call us, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill at JillOnMoney.com. When we return, we're going to finish up this hour talking a little bit more about the Equifax breach. It's Jill on Money. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. Before we wrap up the hour, I want to get to an email, really important topic. Rob writes, I follow your columns. I enjoy reading your helpful insights on lots of topics. Although the Equifax breach is the most contemporary issue, there will be more in the future, to be sure. Therefore, I'd like to take measures to check my kids' credit report and freeze their credit. However, the big three don't make it easy. Trying to pull a credit report results in being denied and asked to mail to upload relevant documentation, official ID, utility bill to prove their identity. Same goes with the freeze. It doesn't seem as easy to do this. Any suggestions? This is Rob from San Diego. So, Rob, here's what I did. I went and poked around a little bit and come to find out that you're right. It really actually depends a little bit on your state. The deal is that a lot of the criminals love the idea of getting a social security number of a minor because that's a clean slate. And so that's why it's become this really easy thing to do. There was some movement to have a government law pass a Protect Children from Identity Theft Act, but I don't think it's really gone anywhere. Equifax offers a free service that will allow parents to create a credit report for a minor and then freeze it, regardless of your state requirement. So you should check that out. Experian is not to create any files for minors. TransUnion lets parents and guardians check for the presence of a credit file on their dependents, but it also only allows freezes in states that reserve the rights, so you can check that out. You can literally Google this. Innovus, which is that weird fourth horseman, it allows parents and guardians to place a freeze on their dependents' file regardless of state laws. So I don't know why states wouldn't allow that. It just seems to me it's crazy. So try that. I hope that works for you. Good luck. All right, stay tuned. We've got a fabulous interview teed up, ready to go for the second hour. It's author and columnist Rana Faruhar. Her book, Makers and Takers, How Wall Street Destroyed Main Street. She'll be up next. You're listening to Jill on Money. We'll be right back.